I'm Chris Lehman, filling in today for Michael Dunn, and this is Oregon on the Record on KLCC. Coming up, a conversation with three local journalists about the stories they're following this summer. But first, for more than a year, Oregon on the Record has been a place for conversations about the issues that matter to our community, be it healthcare, the environment, education, criminal justice, and a whole lot more. Through it all, the show has had just one host, Michael Dunn. Until today, that is. Today, Michael is going to be a guest, and he's going to shed some light on why this program is taking a break for the foreseeable future. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I understand you had a pretty eventful trip out to the Oregon coast recently. What happened?
Yeah, Chris, my first ever trip on an ATV on a quad out on the sand dunes was wonderful. It was a great experience. My son got me this for Father's Day, and so it was wonderful. A perfect day. We were riding out on the dunes. It was terrific. And for many people who know, you know, on the dunes sometimes things can shift, and sometimes things can appear in front of you too fast, and you can't react. And well, that's what happened to me, Chris. So I was tooling along as happy as can be, and then basically fell off a cliff, went over the handlebars, and then this very large ATV decided to land right on top of me.
in a word, ouch, right? Big time,
yeah,
ouch.
Really much.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
You had a pretty eventful trip back to the Eugene area, as I understand it, as a result of this.
Yeah, it's when you injure yourself, and I was significantly injured, when you injure yourself on the dunes, I mean, the first course of action is, of course, getting you off the dunes, and luckily they kind of have an SUV with wide tires that can get out to you, and that's what they did. They were able to load me into I felt like a camping gear being loaded into an SUV, and then they got me to the road and then loaded me into an ambulance, and then they were going to take me to the Florence airport to life flight me out to Peace South Riverbend. And I guess it's kind of funny, in good old little Florence, it's like, well, either we're going to have the helicopter meet you at the airport, or actually we're going to reroute you, and we're going to take off from one of the high school football fields. So they actually had to drive me to the football stadium and load me in the back of a life flight. And so they, I'd never been in a helicopter before, and that was my first time. Didn't get to see a lot. I was flat on my back, and they flew me out to Riverbend, and that's when the sort of, if you will, the real journey began.
Yeah. So you have a long road ahead of you. Not to sound like a cliche, but man, what's the outlook for you right now?
Yeah. So I cracked my pelvis. I broke a bunch of ribs. I punctured my lung. And so they did surgery right away, and they were able to insert some rods in my pelvis, and so that's going to help greatly in terms of recovery. Of course, with ribs, a lot of times you can't do much. So that was all pretty well, and so this all happened on Saturday a week ago, and everything was going great until Sunday night. I took a turn for the worse, and so I started to have what's called a massive bleeding event into my lungs, and so had to do a bunch of transfusions, and it was a life-threatening situation, and so they rushed me into emergency surgery, and I think I went through 2.5 liters of blood, and they were able to stabilize me. And so, you know, that was the worst of it. And so then I was in the hospital for about 9 days and really had, you know, wonderful, wonderful folks looking after me. And so, yeah, I mean, through those sort of fits and starts, I'm home now and on the road to recovery. It's going to be about 6 weeks of using a walker and just getting stronger. I'm a pretty active person, and so it's a struggle just kind of, you know, kind of limping around on a walker and going so slow that even I think snails would call me a slowpoke. And but it's going good, and you know, I think that like I said, each day getting a little bit stronger.
Yeah. Well, Thanks for sharing that with us, Michael. And we've had the chance to run some reruns the last few days on Oregon on the Record, pulling from the great vault of conversations you've had on Oregon on the Record recently. But again, just to give you time to recover and heal up and recuperate, the show is going on a break for probably the next month or so, just to give you time to heal up. So please do take it easy, Michael.
Yeah, I definitely will. And while I'm on break, I'll just I think I'll just interview my cats from time to time and just keep in practice with the interview techniques.
Sure. Well, and maybe when you get back, you'll have a newfound compassion for people who've had ATVs land on top of them.
I think it's a club you don't want to belong to, but if you are, I imagine there's great stories to tell.
All right. Well, Michael, all of us here at KLCC, and I'm sure I can add everyone listening right now as well, wish you a complete and speedy recovery, and we look forward to the time that you can fill the host chair once again.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Coming up after a break, three local reporters join us for a news roundtable about some of the stories they've been covering this summer. This is Oregon on the Record on KLCC. Welcome back to Oregon on the Record on KLCC. I'm Chris Lehman, in today for Michael Dunn. So, as we just heard, this show is about to go on break, but before we do that, we thought it would be a good idea to check in with some local journalists to see what stories they're following this summer. Joining me here in the studio are KLCC reporter Rebecca Hansen-White, KLCC reporter Nathan Wilk, and Amanda Lurie, a reporter for The Chronicle, which is a weekly paper and website that serves Springfield, Creswell, Cottage Grove, and Pleasant Hill. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.
So, Amanda, let's start with you. We don't often associate late July with elections, but sure enough, just a couple of days ago, it was election night in Cottage Grove. What was on the ballot and how'd it turn out?
Well, right now, all the results are still unofficial, but it's three city councilors who are up for recall. It's city councilors Mike Fleck, Alex Dreer, and Chalice Savage. And so far, about 62% of the votes are in favor of recalling them.
Yeah, so a recall of three city council members, that's pretty significant for any community. What were some of the issues that were being discussed around this recall election?
So something that I've heard consistently is specifically in Ward 2 of Cottage Grove, there were some concerns over how the unhoused camps were managed or essentially put together and monitored throughout the town, but especially in Ward 2. And those concerns ultimately led to recall attempts.
Yeah. So what were some of the ideas that people had who were attempting to do the recall? I mean, did they have different sort of plans for the way the city should approach it?
I think it's more a matter of, I've spoken with the chief petitioner, his name is Michael Bork, he's the man who filled out all the paperwork to get this recall going, and something that he's made clear is that this is sort of the start of hoping to address the issues in Cottage Grove. It's not going to be an instant change, it's sort of a catalyst that he hopes for, and so sort of freeing up some space and trying to move forward.
Yeah. All right. Well, summer can be a great time for reporters to hit the road, and that's what you did this week, Rebecca. In fact, you just got back last evening from Lincoln County, where you spent a couple of days on assignment. So what took you out to the coast?
Yeah, so one of the biggest issues on the Oregon coast right now is housing. They have a pretty big homeless issue, but they also have a pretty big population of people who they have full-time jobs. And which, you know, in a city like Eugene, they would be able to stay afloat and stay housed with the types of jobs they have, like teaching or EMT. And a lot of them are month to month and on the verge of becoming homeless because of the giant shortage of housing on the Oregon coast and just the big income disparity that they have there and the number of second homes and the number of vacation rentals and the struggles to, you know, build in non-tsunami zones and in safe, you know, non-forested areas. And so I visited and I talked to a couple people who have really, you know, struggled to stay housed. And I also talked to a lot of city officials about how they're trying to address this huge housing issue that they have where they can't recruit local nurses. They can't recruit teachers because there's nowhere for those people to live.
Well, what are some of the ideas that you heard during your time out in Lincoln County this week? I mean, it's not just as simple as saying we want more housing. What do they plan to do about that?
I think that there is a big push to build a lot of subsidized housing. So there's more state funding now than ever before to build housing for people who are on the lowest rung of the economic scale, to get some subsidized housing for them and some specialized subsidized housing for people who are like veterans or who have a mental illness. So that's one effort that they actually have quite a few units coming online this year. But I think for the missing middle type of housing, I think that they're really in struggling for what to do. Some businesses have decided to just build housing for their own employees. But if you work for a small employer, you're kind of out of luck. So I think that they're still looking at, like, what can we do with our regulations? How can we, you know, lobby the state to maybe change some rules? Or how can we work with our local businesses to make sure that we can have places for the people that we recruit to do these essential jobs for them to live?
And that's an area, too, where there's some pressure from vacation rentals and people who come out and spend money and contribute to the economy on the coast. But it also means that those housing units aren't available for people who need to live there year-round and work in some of these critical roles.
And they've tried to regulate that in a couple of different ways over the years. So Lincoln County itself has made it pretty difficult to start a new vacation rental and is phasing a lot of them out. But in the actual cities, some cities have addressed it and some cities have banned them in certain neighborhoods, which I think they're hoping will help reduce the pressure in some areas. But I don't think it's all vacation rentals. I also think it's just in Lincoln County and on the Oregon coast, just like everywhere else, people should have probably been building more houses over the last couple of decades, after the 2008 crash. And they just necessarily weren't keeping up with the amount of need that exists in a lot of these communities.
Okay, well, we'll listen for your stories coming up this month on KLCC. Nathan, you also had the chance to report from the field this week, although in this case, the field was actually a giant landfill. What can you tell us about that?
That's true, Chris. Yes, this week I went on a tour near the Coffin Butte landfill, which is located by Adair Village in rural Benton County. And so this is a very large landfill, a significant revenue source for the county. And right now it's looking to expand out to potentially extend its lifespan. But I heard from residents while I was out there in the area who have had negative experiences living by this large landfill. Some community members said that on some days the odor got so bad that they had to think about whether to let their kids out for recess. There's also worries about fire risk among that community. It's a really interesting similarity to draw to TV Butte and the quarry proposal there mechanically, because what you're looking at here is a large project, local community members, many of whom are in opposition to an expansion or the creation of that quarry in TV Butte. And ultimately, it is county officials who have to make those land use decisions. So definitely a fun day out there, up high, looking down upon the landfill there in Benton County.
And both TV Butte and in the Oak Ridge area and Coffin Butte north of Corvallis, those are stories that take a long time to unfold. It's not just a single vote or a single process event that you can cover. You really have to stay tuned.
Absolutely. I mean, in both cases, here in Benton County, for example, this landfill has been around for a very, very long time. And there are many community members I talked to who moved there thinking, well, this is going to close eventually, and have continued to deal with those effects. And so, yeah, these projects take a long time, and you really learn about the county process and how many different people give their recommendation in terms of whether these projects should move forward in these rural areas where a small number of residents do live nearby.
Once again, we're talking with Nathan Wilk and Rebecca Hansen-White from the KLCC Newsroom, and Amanda Lurie, who's joining us today from The Chronicle. And let's turn back to you, Amanda. Cottage Grove has had another significant development in the news there that has been turning some heads, and it's kind of related to some of the issues that surrounded the recall, right?
Yes, so I think the conversation around town on what to do about their unhoused situation has really, you know, been prevalent recently, especially with St. Vincent de Paul rescinding its, I believe, $2.3 million offer to help create some shelters, essentially, in that town. There's definitely some mixed feedback from the town. Some people are excited that St. Vincent will not be taking on that role, and some are sad that they've lost a really great opportunity for an outside source to provide funding that the town does not have. So it's a very interesting topic.
And what reasons did St. Vincent de Paul give when they announced their decision to move away from participating in that?
Of course. So they sent a letter to city staff and council, I believe. Most of the letter is online at chronicle1909.com. And they did cite two reasons. The first being that the recall effort essentially showed a division within the town, and they were hoping there would be a unified front and a unified outlook on what resources the town would like. And the second was that there was a city councilor who went to some of the St. Vincent de Paul locations in Eugene, and essentially the St. Vincent de Paul people said that that was a disruption, and it was just a lack of communication between the city and St. Vincent de Paul, where they previously had had incredible communication. So the lack of the united front, as well as iffy communication, essentially resulted in them giving all the funds that they had accrued and, I guess, gotten back to the state or back to the organizations in which they got grants from.
Thank you. Nathan, you reported recently on some friction between organizers of this month's Pride Festival in Eugene and the city itself, but it sounds like there's been some movement on that front. Can you get us up to speed on what happened and where things are now?
Absolutely. So organizers of Pride and local LGBTQ plus community members had criticized the community, or the city rather, over a lack of communication and coordination around Pride. There is a concert happening the same day that is taking up a lot of the parking spaces that Pride has traditionally used to have spaces for its attendees to park and come into Alton Baker Park. And since then, Eugene Pride has released a follow-up statement thanking the community for its help and saying that there has been some movement there. One of the issues was a lack of coordination by organizers' statements with the Eugene Police Department around safety at Pride, counter protesters, and Eugene Pride organizers now say they have gotten more clarity on what that will look like going into the event as far as safety goes. As well, they say Keezy Enterprises, which is doing that sold-out concert on the same day, has opened up some more areas to park, and there are also several parking spots throughout downtown Eugene and near the park where organizers are encouraging community members to go and walk or bike or bus to the site itself. So those organizers were very thankful. I will say that the limits in terms of parking on the park, which is that it will only be available to carpools of four or more people and as accessible parking for people with disabilities. That is still in place. So parking may be more limited than in previous years, but organizers definitely speaking about good progress after some of that contention last month.
Rebecca, this is often a slow time of year for local government, although not in Cottage Grove, apparently, but the Lane County Board of Commissioners certainly isn't taking the summer off. In fact, next week, they're set to vote on a controversial proposal to change the way the county does redistricting. And we just have a couple minutes left, but what can you tell us about the proposal and the process so far?
Yeah, so this is the every 10 years Lane County does a charter review where they look at their charter, which is like a constitution. So you can only change it with a vote of the commissioners and a vote of the people. And they decide what is still current and what is out of date and needs to change. And so this year, their charter review committee had a couple changes, including an independent redistricting committee, so commissioners wouldn't get to decide their own election lines. And so that's this process that's been happening for a year. But this summer, it heated up quite a bit with an outside proposal from a local lawyer, Stan Long, that would do a couple of things. It would make the redistricting committee, it would still kind of be independent, but one of the major differences is his proposal would make it, the entrance requirements quite a bit more stringent. So you would have to be registered to vote for 3 years to participate in redistricting and vote in two of the last three elections, which some people feel like it would really exclude young people from being involved in redistricting at all because, you know, you'd have to be 21 to participate. And his proposal would also trigger redistricting next year and put some concrete boundaries in the charter, which may cause some legal issues. And so it's unclear how much of his whole proposal they're going to consider next week, because some people like parts of it, some people like the whole thing, and the commission is pretty divided on this proposal. So on Tuesday at 9 a.m., they'll take this up and decide whether they want to send it to voters to ratify to become a part of the charter. And so that would be Tuesday at 9 a.m.
And like a lot of the stories we've talked about today, a lot has already happened with that issue, and there's a lot that's still to come. Thanks to our panelists today, KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White, KLCC's Nathan Wilk, and Amanda Lurie from The Chronicle. I'm Chris Lehman, and if you missed the start of our show today, we spoke with our regular host, Michael Dunn, about why this program is taking a break over the coming weeks. You can hear that conversation and the rest of this show, as well as previous editions of Oregon on the Record, on our website, klcc.org. Thanks for joining us today, and if you're listening, Michael, we wish you the best.